Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Dental Practice Heroes Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Paul Etchison, and we got a good episode today. I'm going to share with you someone that I know through a previous coaching relationship. This was a client of mine, but a really good dude, just a dentist in Indiana, a good Midwestern boy who he wanted this practice where he could cut back, and he wanted to create a practice where he could bring an associate, be multi-doc, and eventually move it into more of a surgical focus. It was one of my clients that really kind of followed and did everything he said he was going to do, and just really cool guy. So I wanted to get him on to share his story and what it was like with him taking over a practice and then growing it into the practice that he desired and the one that he dreamed of. So he's still in that process, but I wanted to share the story. I think it's really relatable for all of us as practice owners and just goes to show us how much we can do as owners of practices. We can do whatever we want. We can design the practice the way we want if we're just willing to put in the energy. So without further ado, let's get to the interview.
The Dental Practice Heroes Podcast, where successful dentists share their best systems, methods, and lessons learned to help you achieve early financial freedom through profitable practice ownership. We're here to talk about operating a successful dental business through communication, strong leadership, and by being the hero for your patients and your team.
Hey everyone, it's me, Dr. Paul Etchison, and year end is coming up, and if you've got the right CPA working in your corner, well, you already know what you're going to pay in taxes, and you know that you aren't going to be surprised come springtime. I see so many practice owners putting so much time into doing their own bookkeeping, payroll, and financial planning for the year. Your CPA should be someone in your corner, providing you with the tools to help make decisions regarding running your practice. And if you aren't getting useful and timely financials, you are essentially driving a car without a dashboard. I want to tell you about Bull Moose Financial, a firm specializing in dental practices that can handle all of your bookkeeping, all your financial reports, tax and state compliance, as well as giving you tax projections well before the year end so that you can plan and make changes proactively. I worked with Bull Moose for 6 years before I partnered with MB2, and I can tell you, they know what they're doing, and I never realized how much I truly needed a dental-specific CPA until I started working with them. So stop wasting time trying to do it on your own. Let the specialists handle that part of your practice so that you can spend more time growing your business. Reach out to Bull Moose Financial at bullmoosefinancial.com, and if you mention the Dental Practice Heroes Podcast, they will waive the $2,000 onboarding fee. That's a $2,000 value. That's bullmoosefinancial.com. That's B-U-L-L-M-O-O-S-E Financial. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Dental Practice Heroes Podcast, where we believe that armed with knowledge and intentionality, anyone can become the hero that their practice needs and deserves. I'd like to welcome my guest, a graduate of Indiana University and owner of Hamilton Town Dentistry in Noblesville, Indiana. Please welcome to the podcast, Dr. Greg Hopkinson. What's happening, Greg? How you doing, man?
Not much, man. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Doing good, man. So Noblesville, talk about it. What is it? Where is it? Never heard of it. I've heard of it, but I mean, it's anyone who's never heard.
Right, yeah. Yeah, Noblesville is just right outside of Indianapolis. I don't know if you've heard of like Carmel or Fishers. It's kind of like right in between all that. It's a northeast suburb of Indianapolis, and it's a growing area. We're kind of in a Simon outdoor mall that's over there right next to like a concert venue and stuff like that where all the big artists come and play and stuff. So it's like right down the street. It's a small town, but it's growing a lot, and it's got like a little downtown square, you know, kind of area and stuff, but it's changing a lot, and some people like it, some people don't, but I think
that's how it is
for the best, you know?
It's always, because like where we're at New Lenox here, there's all the people we see that like we'll get farmers come in here, it's patients, and they'll be like, you've been in New Lenox a long time, you got to see a change, and they're always like, oh yeah, stupid. Right. Used to be a nice, quiet place, and now it's just people move in.
Yep.
But it's like, dude, like, what do you want, man? I guess like they wanted to live kind of out in the country, and that's what's happened. It's sprawling out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How far are you from Indianapolis? Like, what's the drive time?
Actually, my associate lives like right downtown, like in the center of downtown. It's probably about a 30-minute drive, so not too bad.
Oh, okay. So nice and close. Nice.
Yeah. It's just right off the highway.
Yeah. I wanted to have you on just because I know your story, and I want to share it with the listeners. And I've known Greg for a while. He is somebody who had a practice and he was working and he brought on an associate and he cut his days down. And I think that's just a really cool thing for everyone to listen to. And I think a lot of people want to do that. And I do think as a practice owner, it's something that everybody should do. So before we really get into that, why don't you give the listeners kind of a brief history of graduating into like your associateship, into your ownership, like how that journey, quickly how that went?
Yeah, so graduated in 2015 from IU here in Indianapolis. And then I actually moved down to the Nashville, Tennessee area for a while. I was in Murfreesboro working for a private practice there. He had just built, well, actually, he was finishing building a new office at that time. So we were kind of limited on space when I first started. I was only doing like 2 or 3 days a week at first. And then once we moved into the new space, I was doing 4 days a week. But yeah, I learned a lot there, you know, what to do and what not to do. So definitely, we'll probably get into that later, but some lessons the hard way there. It was a good experience overall, I'd say. The plan was for me to originally buy into that practice after a year or two. And then, you know, after the first year, he realized, actually, I don't think I want to give up being the practice. So my wife and I thought about it. Do I want to stay down there and buy a practice there or move back to Indianapolis where she's from? So we decided to move back up here. So I took a job at an urgent dental place called Immedia Dent, which was actually no longer a business now, but working like 12-hour days. It sucked, but you know, it was something to at least get me back up here so I could kind of, I knew I wanted to buy a practice. So I just was doing that to kind of get me back up here so I could start looking, you know. I actually was looking for a practice and found one and had a partner actually in the beginning, a friend of mine from dental school. We bought the practice together. We were both kind of looking at the same time and this one just kind of fell in my lap actually. And we decided to take it on together and with the plan to like do like expanded hours and kind of build it to be a two-doctor practice and eventually move to somewhere with more space because we only had 5 ops. But then a couple years into that, he decided to go back to an endo residency. So I bought him out at that point. It was 2017 when we bought the practice. And then 2019 is when I bought him out. So about 2.5 years after we bought the practice, I bought him out. And in the meantime, we were both working like 2 to 3 days a week in our practice and working a couple of days other places. Like I was driving up to Lafayette, which is about an hour away, a couple of days a week, and just kind of a few different practices that I was working at. And then I ended up buying him out and went full time at my practice. And then I was by myself until 2022, last September, I brought an associate on and I cut back to 3 days a week and she does 4 days a week.
Nice, nice. So you mentioned your associateship being a good experience. And I have a similar story where it's like, I had a great associate experience, even though sometimes I don't say the nicest things about that place. It was a great experience. And I got fast. And you mentioned like what not to do. Was there anything that kind of sticks out that you like remember from that associateship that you were like, okay, like I'm going to do this differently?
Yeah, I just think in general, just kind of the way he treated me almost. And part of it's my fault for not doing my due diligence in the beginning. You know, I was excited to get a job out of school and it sounded like an awesome opportunity. Some of the stuff in the contract, I didn't have an attorney review it, which is a big mistake. I kind of just shared it with some faculty members at school and they kind of looked over it for me a little bit. And he made all these promises, which he ended up never fulfilling. And then like with the buy-in thing, like I moved all the way down there with the plan to buy in and it just didn't end up working out well, but it was a well-run practice, I would say. You know, he had a really strong hygiene program. Didn't do a ton of really bread and butter and nothing too crazy, but I mean, it was a good practice for him and me coming in there. And I guess he just wasn't ready to let go of it like he thought he was. So
I feel like that's like always the story. I feel like it's always like, yeah, I did. I was supposed to buy in and then I didn't. And the owner didn't want to sell or to. And two, like now you know this as well. Like, you know, you have a practice and you have an associate. For someone to come into an associateship and already get some on paper buy-in stuff for young docs like us. Now, if it's just some old guy on exit, that's a different story. But it's hard. You got to date a little bit.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I see it from his point of view too, you know, now as being an owner, like I see it from his point of view. Like, yeah, he built this practice and he didn't want to let go of any of it. And what I learned from that is whenever I was looking to hire my associate, you know, I was very upfront saying like, oh, there's probably not going to be any ownership opportunity, at least in the immediate future. So I don't want to get your hopes up or anything like that. Like I was just very upfront about that because I didn't want them to kind of go through what I went through and resent me for that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good conversation to have. I have associates ask me this when we hire them too. And I say the same thing. I say, you know what? There may be an opportunity for this. I would love that if we can get that far, but we got to get there first. I'm open to it, but yeah. So like, what did this practice like kind of look like when you acquired it? And when you went into it, what was like your first impression of like, this is what we need to do? Like, what was your first goal, I guess?
When we first bought the practice, the guy that we bought it from, he started it, like it had been open for like 5 years maybe at the time, but he only was working 3 days a week. So he's doing Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at this practice. And he had another practice about probably an hour and a half away that he was kind of splitting his time between. So he never really got that one really off the ground. So he was only doing like, I think the first year, 2017, it only did like 485,000 or something like that, you know, which is obviously way too small for two doctors, right? So we expanded the hours. We grew it. I think it was like the second year, like so full 2018, I think we did like 700. And then we just kind of kept kind of growing from there. And we've now since grown it quite a bit since then. But I just feel like he was, I don't really know what he was doing wrong per se, other than just not focusing all his time on the practice. He did fine work. I mean, it wasn't bad. And he would treat people well from what I saw. I mean, we weren't there together or anything like that. So, but I know there was some patients had some loyalty to him and stuff like that. So he seemed like a good guy. And I just don't know. I think he just wasn't putting enough time and effort into it to really get it off the ground.
Right. So what was the biggest challenge, like walking into that, looking back on it?
I think in the beginning for me and my partner together in there, we just weren't making a lot of money in the beginning, you know, because it was so small. And so we were trying to split time between there and working other places and stuff like that. And that was probably the biggest challenge. And then, I mean, my partner and I, we got along really well. We still are good friends to this day. We text each other, you know, he's an endodontist now, so I have questions about endo, I'll text him or whatever, you know, and he's always very open and willing to help out and stuff like that. He's in Cincinnati now, but I really think the biggest challenge was just growing it to be big enough to support both of us, which we were finally kind of getting to that point whenever he left, but then he left and it was nice to be able to focus all my time and energy on that one practice, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Now, if anyone's thinking about getting a practice, I get this question quite a bit with a partner, acquiring a practice with a partner. Now, you guys still get along. You guys had a good relationship. And we know that's always some risk when we're going to some partnership. Just the general nuts and bolts of opening a practice with somebody else. What would you say about that? Like in retrospect, do you think that that was the right way to do it? Or do you think like, I think we can talk about this since it ended well on mutual terms when he went to endo residency. Would you recommend that to anyone or would you recommend against it or kind of just neutral?
Like I said, we had a great relationship and we still do, but I do think it probably would have been best just to go with it by myself. There's definitely strong points for both things, right? Like I learned from him from some things. He learned from me from some things, I'm sure as well. We pushed each other a little bit and we were able to bounce ideas off each other and stuff like that. There was definitely some challenges, like some of the staff that I got along really well with, he might not have gotten along as well with, stuff like that. And I think scheduling was kind of tough too, because we were trying to keep people with the same people, you know, or like keep patients with the same doctor. And sometimes that was a little challenging, fitting people in on certain days and stuff like that when we weren't working the same schedule. So you can kind of do things your own way. And we were able to practice, like for example, I've always been very into technology and things like that, right? Even though he's my age, actually a little bit, I think almost a year younger than me, he was very old school when it came to dentistry. Like he wanted his impressions. He didn't want a scanner. He didn't want a mill. Didn't want 3D printing, anything like that. He was also very conservative when it came to spending money, which is good in a way, you know, obviously to keep overhead down and stuff like that. But you got to put some money into it to grow too with marketing and stuff like that. We built our own website by ourselves because we had the time at the beginning and it actually turned out really well. I mean, I thought it looked nice and stuff like that. But then, you know, I ended up hiring a marketing company to help with the Google ads and stuff after he left. And I think we really started to see the return on that. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah, overall it was a good experience, but yeah.
So when you did take over, you mentioned like your biggest challenge was just growing it to a size that could support both of you. I mean, looking back on it, what do you think you were the most focused on in retrospect? Is there something that you wish you would have focused on more, knowing what you know now?
I would say probably, yeah, just putting more into the marketing and adding the technology sooner would have been probably what I would have done differently. With getting a scanner, I think patients are always really, at least, well, it's probably been 5 years now since I've, or yeah, something like that, since I had a scanner now, you know, and patients are always wowed by that. And it's one of those internal marketing things you don't directly see a return on or anything, but them seeing it and saying, wow, and being more accepting of treatment and stuff like that, I think that's a big plus of that. And yeah, I think just investing more into the practice as far as that goes.
Now, I remember with your website, at some point you redid the website, but then at some point you went back and redid the content to project a little bit different image. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think, yeah, just making it look a little more presentable and just kind of talking more about the technology and stuff like that too, to kind of attract those types of patients. Because before it was very detailed on the different services that we offered and stuff like that. But I think just being more attractive to new patients, seeing the technology up front and kind of building a brand for ourselves instead of just being another dental website.
Yeah, I remember you did the slow motion videos. You want to see somebody look good in a slow motion video, it's Dr. Greg, man.
I don't know about that. Yeah. Yeah. I hate watching those things.
Yeah, I know, dude. Ours is looking like, ours is like 7 years old, maybe 6 years old now.
Yeah.
And I feel like now that I'm 42, like I used to like really get like see these old docs and they have these old headshots. Like they're old. Like, and you meet them in person, you're like, whoa, man, like, you got to update your headshot.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a few more gray hairs and stuff.
Yeah. I like, but now I feel like I look at my headshot and I'm like, and I look in the mirror and I'm like, I don't want to update my head. It's like, dude, it's a 4 year difference. 4 years ago was very different than a 4 year difference now. And it's just like, damn.
You're aging like a fine wine.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. So practicing dentistry, you opened up, you guys were splitting some time, but I mean, had you just been a single doc office with by yourself, you would have been there maybe 5 days a week. Eventually when your partner, when you guys bought out and he moved on, how many days were you practicing then clinically?
I was doing 4.5. So, well, 4 some weeks, 5 some weeks. So every other Friday.
Okay. And then like, what is the motivation for you wanting to cut down?
Honestly, it was when I started to have kids, wanted to spend more time with my family, and also wanted to focus on growing the business to not be so dependent on me being there. Kind of like that book, E-Myth, talk about, you know, actually having a business versus working on the business versus working in the business kind of thing too, you know. The main motivation was just to have more time with my family and to make the practice not so dependent on myself being there all the time.
Were you worried about cutting down and having a drop in income?
I was at a comfortable level. It was one of those things, even if I broke even or maybe lost a little bit, I would have been okay just to have that more free time. And also when I take vacations, I don't have to worry about closing the office and what am I going to do with the staff and stuff like that, right? So yeah, I think it was, the peace of mind was worth it, even if I had to take a little bit of a hit. But luckily, I think I ended up being the same or a little bit more, you know, the next year. So
yeah. What kind of processes did you do to get it to where you could back off? Because you're 3 days clinical now. Correct? And maybe 3.5, you'll do a half day.
Yeah.
What was the process? Like, what did you like go through and take the practice through to make sure that you could get yourself to that point and that would be comfortable and that would work?
One big thing was making sure I had the team to support it, right? So going from 4.5 days to every single Friday. So it's like, they don't want to work more than 4 days, most of them. So working the schedule out to where I had the right amount of people there on each day. And then just, yeah, making sure we were busy enough to really support it. And obviously it's going to take time to get this associate comfortable, and she's doing a lot better now. Like in the beginning, she was definitely slower, and the last few months she's really been ramping up. So, you know, it's taking some time to really get it to flow, but you know, it's getting there. But yeah, overall, I mean, just making sure we were busy enough and making sure we had the team to be able to handle it.
Now that you don't practice clinically as much as you used to, on those days off, are you in the office most of the time or half the time? What would you say?
I would say usually on Thursdays I'm there. So I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and my associate does Tuesday through Friday. I'm usually there on the Thursdays just doing like admin things, or I'll see a patient here and there if I have to, for emergencies if she's too busy, or if it's like a patient of record of mine that only wants to see me, which I know I should probably try to cut that out. But I try to focus more keeping those Thursdays for like the bigger implant cases, or if I'm doing a sedation case or wisdom teeth or stuff like that, is usually what I try to keep those days open for. But I'm usually in the office on Thursdays, like I said, just doing admin. But it's hard sometimes because my associate and I share an office right now because we're, you know, limited space right now. So it's kind of hard to sit down and focus and get stuff done because people are always coming in and out asking questions, and we all have good relationships. They're joking around and want to come back and just chat. You know, it's hard to get stuff done sometimes when I'm there, but we have a good team and a good culture in there and we have a good time. So it's nice to be in there and not having to be focused on teeth all the time and get other stuff done and just getting to chat with the staff too sometimes. So
yeah, I totally know what you mean, because I used to share an office with all the associates. We had like the doctor's office, and that would be, it was also a pass through from one side of our office to the other side. So it was like everybody came through and I was just like, my gosh, like, could I just please stop getting interrupted? Even when I wasn't personally directly being interrupted, like I was just getting distracted. Eventually when COVID happened, we annexed a nice little like 8x12 room out of our waiting room. And I was just, could just shut the door by myself. It's better.
But it's, yeah, for sure.
You still get it. Still
actually
get interrupted.
Focus and get things done.
Yeah, but then sometimes it's lonely. You're like, somebody come say hi for it. It's, so you never have it all, man. You know, it's like, you got to be careful what you wish for there. So like, as far as production, when you cut down, you brought on an associate. Let's talk about, how did you find an associate and was that search difficult?
I was actually pleasantly surprised when I was looking for an associate. I think for Indiana, at least, this is a pretty desirable area to live, I guess, the Fishers, Noblesville, Carmel area. So it wasn't as difficult as I expected it to be. But, you know, I had a few good candidates, and the way I actually found the one that I ended up hiring, she was actually handing out her resume to other offices in like the Carmel area, which is probably about 20 or 30 minutes from my office, but that's where she grew up. She gave a resume to a classmate of mine, who's a friend of mine, and she passed it along to me because she knew I was looking. So I reached out to her, and it ended up working out, and I met with her a couple times. She came shout out at the office, stuff like that, and she seemed like a good fit. So we moved forward with that. But
how many other interviews did you do?
I want to say four, or hold on. Yeah, like four total, I think, that actually got to like where we met in person. I did a couple other phone interviews and stuff like that. And I think there was four candidates that I was like seriously considering. One of them was a new grad, which I was a little nervous about, just being my first associate, having a new grad, and I didn't know how much handholding and stuff like that I would have to do, stuff like that. So I was a little nervous to do that. And then another one had a lot more experience, and I was a little worried I wouldn't be able to keep her busy enough. So I found one, the one I ended up hiring. She had 2 years of experience, which I thought was like a good happy medium there, and we could keep her busy enough, but not too busy and not too much handholding, and kind of go from there. But
hey everyone, I just wanted to share a recent success story I just heard about. 6 months ago, Dr. Dushyant Patel of Sumner Dental Group in Tennessee reached out to Relevance Marketing because he wasn't receiving a whole lot of traffic from his website or anything online. Relevance expanded the online presence by listing the dental office in all the online directories with consistent information, which is super important, fixing any errors, along with redesigning his website using content that Google upranks, all the while keeping aesthetics and search keywords in mind. They then began to publish blogs and information relevant to dentistry using the search keywords for their area. Now, in just a few months, Sumner Dental was in position number one or number two on the Google Map Pack and organic listings for almost every single dental keyword. They saw an 88.9% increase in phone calls, as well as 115% increase in interactions with their Google Business profile. Now, if you think having your phone ring almost twice as often with new patients could really change your practice, well, you're right. If you're looking for a transparent, no contracts, no BS, and results-driven online marketing program, look no further than RelevanceOnlineMarketing.com. It's who I've been using for almost 5 years. Can't say enough good things about them. Hey, mention the Dental Practice Heroes podcast and you'll get your first month free. Go to RelevanceOnlineMarketing.com to schedule your free demo today. That's www.RelevanceOnlineMarketing.com.
Any advice to anyone who's thinking about bringing on an associate who might have some hesitancies of passing the reins or bringing another person into their practice to do dentistry?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a big decision, and you know, there's a lot of stress that goes along with it, but there's definitely a lot of benefits to it. Obviously, you're not going to be able to grow your practice to a certain point if you're limiting yourself, because you're going to be the bottleneck of that at some point, right? So being diligent about making sure you have the right fit, don't just hire the first person that comes by. Yeah, I think that's really the biggest thing, is making sure they're a good culture fit. But it's hard because like working interviews are kind of controversial a little bit, I guess. Some people are against them, some people are for them. I just had her show me some x-rays and pictures and stuff of work she's done, and I was like, it looks pretty good. So I think we can work with that. So
yeah, I think it's funny. It's like there's really no good way to kind of assess that. Even with the working interview or looking at pictures, like it's like, check out my Instagram. That's my highlight reel.
Right. Guys. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So it's like,
yeah, they're not going to show you the bad stuff. Or they're going to show you their best view cases. You know?
Right. Right. Here's one I screwed up, but I learned something from it. No, you don't see that.
Right.
So you grew the practice. Share some things, like what were you really focused on when growing the practice? Like, was there anything that you guys like really like kind of leaned into that you felt like helped a lot?
Yeah, I definitely think doing implant training was a big boost for me. It's something that I really enjoy and more passionate about, I would say. Just surgery in general. So like I've done some implant courses through Implant Pathway, and I've done some other surgical training through CSI, which I know you have Tahir and Brisky on here sometimes. I would say the biggest thing that helps kind of propel the growth was adding those implants and other surgery.
Mm-hmm. Where are you guys getting most of your new patients from?
Mostly from, yeah, just Google and internal referrals and stuff like that. We do some Google ads and things like that, Facebook ads, and it's just a mix of all that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done mailers or anything like that. I did do like a couple rounds and didn't see anything from it, so I'll probably do that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had some success with mailers. We don't do them anymore, but this was, you know, I'm talking 12 years ago. It was a different world, man. So like looking back on the growth, was there anything that you learned kind of later that you wish you would have known earlier, that if you could go back again and you could have done it faster or better?
I would say, like I was saying earlier with my partner, we're doing a lot ourselves, and we even try to create the Google Ads account ourselves and doing things like that instead of hiring somebody that has more expertise in that. Even if you're spending a few hundred bucks a month on somebody else to manage them for you, you're going to hopefully see a lot better of a return. So I think just investing more into the letting professionals kind of handle that stuff a little sooner probably would have been good. But yeah, and then just adding the technology sooner probably as well.
Yeah, yeah. So like going forward, you're looking forward to this episode. We're actually recording this in the end of 2023, but this will get released out in January 2024. Looking forward this year, what are you going for? What are the big goals? What's like your focus for 2024?
Right now we are in a 5-op office with no really room to expand. So I've been working on it for a while, actually trying to find either a building or some land to build a new office on to get some more space so we can keep growing. But it's been a process for sure. But I do have some land like that's under contract in this new development that's going to be like less than a mile from my current office. It's going to be a really nice development with a lot of mixed use and residential, commercial, you know, different retail stuff in there. I'm in the process of buying some land there and building a new office from the ground up to expand there. We should break ground in 2024. We probably won't be in there until 2025, but that's something exciting to look forward to, at least to have more space to continue to grow and probably add more associates at some point, maybe not right away, but as needed, kind of, you know, when we get to that point. And then I'm planning on probably going to do some more CE stuff. I think I'm going to head out to CSI maybe to do some more sinus grafting or block grafting courses with them as well to be able to do more implants and things like that. Because sometimes there's cases that I want to do, but it's a little out of my comfort zone at this point. So just getting some more training for stuff like that so I can handle more of those and keep them in-house.
Yeah. Last question before we go on to the segments. With your new building that you're planning on building, is there one thing or one feature that you're going to have in this office that you don't have in this office currently that you're the most excited about?
I think it'll probably be, honestly, a nicer break room for my staff, because right now we have this like tiny little kitchen that's like, it's like storage / kitchen area. There's like no table or anything. It's like a microwave and a sink and that's about it. No refrigerator. Aside from that, I would say surgical suites that I'm going to have like nitrous plumbed into, a little more space in there, you know, being able to have a nice computer in there. I can pull up the CBCTs in the rooms and stuff like that. I think that'll be a really nice thing. And then also just not paying rent to the man anymore, you know, being able to have some skin in the game there as well. So,
yeah, I would love to own my own building. And it was something that we were going to do if we hadn't expanded when we did, if we were waiting for our lease. We were planning on moving the office and building my own building because I just want windows. I'm in a strip mall and we got some windows.
Yeah, for sure.
In front. And sometimes I feel like it's in a cave. I feel you, man.
I completely,
Our break room, it was the same way. We had shelves on every wall and it was just like, I wouldn't want anyone to see it. I would never want the patients to see that break room.
Oh, no, definitely.
You know, because that's backstage, bro. All right, let's move on to the segment where we share little systems that add up to big results. Dr. Greg, what is your little system?
So I would say this is a system more for the team. We started a bonus system. This was when you and I were working together. You were my coach or whatever there. So we started this bonus system, which I've kind of developed a little bit more since we first started it. Just little tweaks here and there. But it's basically we set the goal and a percentage of payroll, and then everything above that they get a percentage of based on how many days the daily goal is hit for the month, which really motivates the team in a lot of ways. I mean, let's be honest, like there's a lot of controversy on bonus systems. Some people think you should have them. Some people think you shouldn't, think they should just work hard because they're getting their paycheck. But let's be honest, as a dentist, when I was not paid on production, I was a lot less motivated to fit in that extra crown that day or, you know, whatever. I also just feel like the team works hard and they deserve it, honestly. And I would feel bad that they're working so hard and I'm the only one seeing the benefit from it. So I really think that's been a big part of our growth as well. Cause I started that, I think it was about 3 years ago, and it's been a really good team, really works hard to make sure they hit the goals and things like that. And obviously it's not all about money. It's about taking care of our patients and things as well, but it's always nice to see that benefit to them as well, because I want to share that with them. So.
Well, I mean, you bring up a great point about bonus systems is that what is the motivation for an hourly worker to work harder and make their day more chaotic to fit something else in for added production. And really it only, it goes to the revenue to the practice and it doesn't really change anything for them. So I think you make a really good point of why those bonus systems are important. Yeah. And you're right. It's not about the money. It's about taking care of our patient base and saving them a trip and, it's convenient for them. There's a lot of things that works for the patient, but I like bonus systems and I think everybody should have one. And I like what you're doing, man. And thanks for the mention of coach. Me and Greg did had a previous coaching relationship for a little bit. That's why I know so much about his practice.
Been a couple years now. Yeah. Been a couple years now, but it was definitely a huge help for sure.
Yeah. All right, man. So let's move on to the segment where we celebrate that all of us are human and none of us is perfect. Dr. Greg, let's get real.
Everybody get down. It's about to get real in here.
What is the biggest struggle at your practice right now and what are you doing about it?
Capacity, like we talked about a little bit there, working on expanding, and it's been a pretty big stress on me for a while now with doing this whole, because we started, I mean, honestly, I think we got the land under contract after talking with the seller for, you know, a few months. We got it under contract in April and we were supposed to close by like November. Now we're pushed back even farther because of the way the development's kind of happening. There's some townhomes that are going in behind me we're kind of waiting on, you know, their utilities and approvals and things like that to get going so we can kind of tie into that. So really that's the biggest struggle right now, is just trying to figure out how to accommodate all the patients and things like that and keep growing without having the extra space for, it's going to be another year and a half probably at least before we're in there. So
how do you feel about evening hours, Greg?
We did them for a little bit.
Let's go back there.
When my partner and I were both there originally, that was our plan to do those expanded hours, but after having kids and stuff, it just wasn't for me. I mean, it works for some, and I think my team also did not like it. We had a lot more turnover when we did have those evening hours, I feel like. And it might have been just because of that, but we were new practice owners at the time. But once he left, I didn't want to do all those evening hours myself. So I cut back a little bit then, and then eventually cut back a little bit more. So we were doing until 7 o'clock, and we cut back to 6 o'clock, and then we're just till 5 o'clock on 3 days a week, and then the other two actually shorter days till two. So
yeah, you're doing what you want to do. You know, you're run it the way that you want to run it. And you're right. Some people evening hours works better for, but I'd say the majority would prefer not to. And
yeah,
me personally, I kind of prefer it. I stay up really late and sleep really, really late too. So that's
that's nice.
It's more like that's a different issue.
It was hard when my daughter was first born too. And like, she was in bed by the time I got home most nights, you know, so because she went 6:30, 7 o'clock when they were like an infant, you know, and so it was hard. I never got to see her because I was gone when she woke up and got home after she went to bed. So it was tough in that part too. So
it's good to point that out, that too, is that that's like a motivating factor for you too, because it's one of the beautiful things about practice ownership is that we get to make those decisions and we get to decide how we want to build this practice around our life and not let the practice run our life. And that's something that you recognized and you said, you know what, this 7 o'clock stuff, we're just cutting back, you know, we're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And the wheels never came off and you're fine. And most people don't do evening hours. So definitely an area of opportunity for anybody. But if you don't want to do it, doesn't mean you have to. Just because you can doesn't mean you have to. So if you could go back to the time to the beginning of your career, what do you wish you could tell yourself?
I would tell myself, don't stress out about the little things so much, even the big things, because they always work themselves out. I mean, when I had my first job and he decided he was no longer interested in let me partner with him on the practice, I was like, oh God, what am I going to do now? Am I going to stay down here in Nashville? Am I going to move back up to Indianapolis? Or where am I going to buy a practice? What am I going to do? And then even when I got up here and found my practice, like things kind of, you know, in the beginning, I was working all these different jobs and stuff and had a couple work out, a couple didn't work out. It was always like the sky was falling, but it all ended up working out just fine. And just take your time and don't stress too much and it's all going to work out.
Yeah, it's so true. And I struggle with that as well. And part of me thinks that's what propels us to be successful, is because we're always so worried about things going wrong. It's like, dude, just chill. And I don't know if I've learned how to chill more, and I have not perfected this by any means. But I don't know if it's part of getting older and realizing and believing in yourself and having that confidence that you can get through it, or if it's just you just had so many things happen, you're just like, I just don't have the energy to care anymore.
Right, yeah.
I don't know which one.
Sure. Yeah, I remember every time I'd have a staff member leave or whatever, it was always like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. But we always found somebody to fill in, and so far so good. We have a great team now and I wouldn't trade them for the world. And I think it's all worked out for the best. So
yeah. And no one's ever lost a team member, even like say like a fairly, not a horrible team member, but no one's ever like, man, I lost that person quit and gosh, I just wish I had him back, because it always works out. And then you're always like, oh, you know, this is better. This is good. It's new. You get another chance to do it again. So it's so true, but we had tend to definitely like sky's falling. I feel you on that. All right. Share a story where you learned a valuable business lesson from an experience or the hard way.
So yeah, going back to that associate position down in, you know, Tennessee, just not having an attorney review the contract and making sure that everything was not even just the buyout part. We didn't even have that in the contract. It was kind of just like, you know, I took his word for it that he would allow that, right? But even like my compensation, because I was getting like a daily rate and not any production for the first while. And it was a lower daily rate than I had seen most other places. But he was saying like, oh, after 90 days, we'll increase it or we'll switch you to production. And then he just never ended up doing it. I kept bugging about it. He's like, oh, yeah, well, next month. We'll talk about it next month. So like really having that stuff in the contract and making sure you really review it and have an attorney review it and just making sure you, all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed and all that good stuff. Because again, everything worked out fine. And I look back on it and just I learned a lesson from it. So.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Ty here doing Colorado Surgical Institute. Dr. Brisky and myself have really enjoyed doing these podcasts with Dr. Etch and talking about everything clinical. So keep your guys' feedback coming. It really helps us curate what we're going to be talking about on the podcast. If you want to learn how to do live patient surgeries and actually do the work yourself with the guidance of Dr. Brisky and myself, come out and see us. We're in Northern Colorado. We're just north of Denver, and we can have you do anything from single implants to wisdom teeth to IV sedation to oral sedation, bone blocks and GBR and sinus lifts, vertical and lateral, and full arch with the whole digital workflow using photogrammetry, 3D printers, mills, and all of the above. So we're here to help. Reach out to us. You can call Chris Richards, our director, at 970-420-6148, and he will definitely have a hero discount for you guys because we love Paul and we love DPH.
Do you see yourself when you go into this new building? Are you going to be still doing clinically, or are you just going to focus more on just you want to do surgically? Like, what is like your ideal goal for when you move this practice? Like, what do you envision it?
I think long term, my goal would definitely be to more focus on the surgery, whether it's wisdom teeth, grafting, you know, doing sinus grafts and stuff like that, doing more implant cases and things like that. That's definitely more what I like to do. And even, you know, cosmetic or full mouth rehab kind of cases. Like that's what I would love to focus on more down the road. I still enjoy the day to day as well here and there, but just not 5 days a week kind of thing. So, but I do enjoy clinical dentistry still. And I do want to continue doing it to a certain extent. I don't see myself ever completely stopping just because I do enjoy it. And I would probably be bored if I didn't. So ultimately I would like to focus more on the surgery and things like that.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to the Dental Practice Hero Sexy Six.
Six sexy questions.
What is your favorite quote and what does it mean to you?
So yeah, one, I know I've heard Mark Costas talk about before and stuff too. I'm in the DSI mastermind and everything like that as well. So like I hear him talk about this all the time, but I really do believe it. The comparison is the thief of joy because you're going to see all these people just crushing it and you're always going to think, oh man, I wish I had that. And you just got to kind of be real with yourself and be true to yourself. And it's okay to look up to them and work towards that, but don't put yourself down because where you're at is not there yet. Like you don't know their whole story. They're probably only posting on Instagram, like you said earlier, you know, just posting the highlights of their life on there. And I'm sure there's some other struggles that they deal with and things like that, but just really keeping true to yourself and not worrying about what somebody else is doing.
Yeah, that's good advice. David Maloli was on with me and we were talking about starting an Instagram movement where we just post like the most horrible things ever, like just like, screaming at our kids and making them cry or just like, just like the realness
but
challenge.
The part is you gotta record it. You know? Yeah. Like, why are you recording me crying?
Yeah. You're such a baby. Look how much you, yeah, right? Yeah, that'd be awesome. All right. What are you reading right now?
I'm not a big reader. I listen to a lot of podcasts and things like that, but if I do read, it's going to be an Audible audiobook. And right now I started The Dichotomy of Leadership, which is a follow-up to the Extreme Ownership book that you actually recommended to me when we were working together. And I thought that was a great, great book. It's a really good book so far, but I haven't gotten that far into it because my ADD kicks in and I just switched to something else here and there, you know, but I tried.
That's like my Audible. It's like 60%, 40%, 30% done.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, do we ever finish anything? No, we just started. All right. Recommend a single book that all dentists should read.
So yeah, going back to that, the Extreme Ownership, the first one, again, the audiobook was actually, I would definitely recommend that over just the traditional book, just because it's actually Jocko and Leif reading the book, and it's pretty cool hearing them actually read it with themselves and everything. And then obviously you got to talk about the Dental Practice Heroes series there, you know?
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for the plug.
Yeah, I actually listened to those ones all the way through, so.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the first one was a little robotic. The second one I did, but
yeah, I'm glad you read that one yourself. Yeah.
Oh man, if you heard the unedited version, there was a lot of F-bombs and frustration, dude. Just repeating the same sentence over and over and over again, and be like, "What is wrong with me?" All right, recommend a seminar, event, or continuing education.
Kind of what I talked about before. I did some implant training at Implant Pathway. So, you know, I thought it was a great foundation for, you know, I've been back there for a couple other of their courses. Like I did their IV station course there. I went to a full arch course there. I did a full mouth rehabilitation course with Wade Pilling out there, which actually, I don't think that was actually associated with Implant Pathway, but it's at their facility and he's one of the mentors there. And then also CSI, the Colorado Surgical Institute. I did, you know, that wisdom tooth course there, and I plan on going back for, you know, another sinus grafting and block grafting course as well. So
I bet a lot of people listening just realized how much CE you take. And they're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, my wife, she has a friend who her husband's an oral surgeon. They were trying to plan a girls trip. And she was like, oh, well, Greg has a CE that weekend. They're like, okay, what about this weekend? Oh, I think he has a CE that weekend too. She's like, Jesus, why should your husband do so much CE?
Yeah. Who is this CE lady he's going to visit?
You're right, yeah. No, man, I need to find out, how do you get your wife to let you do so many golf trips? That's what I need to find out.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. Here's the secret. Is I say, okay, if she was to tell me this, like today, that I can't do my golf trip, I'd be like, honey, I'm 42 years old. I have 3 golf trips a year. By the time I'm 50, I might not be able to swing a club. So that's only 24 more golf trips for the rest of my life. How could you possibly take that away from me?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. But then her dad's like 76 and still going on golf trips, so.
Well, that's a high possibility as well, but are we willing to roll the dice?
You never know. Yeah, you never know.
We got to roll the dice. All right, please share an analogy that you use to communicate an idea to a patient.
I don't do a ton of analogies because I'm really more about take a lot of intraoral pictures and showing x-rays on the screen and stuff like that. So I can usually explain it to them a little better by just showing them. But if I had to pick one that I use more frequently than anything else, it would be a patient comes in that wants to do some cosmetic work, or they want to do certain things, but they have perio, or they have a bunch of infection or bombed out teeth. It's like, we got to build a strong foundation before we build this nice house, you know? So I know that's kind of a pretty common one. I feel like that a lot of people probably use, but it's really the only thing I got. So
there you go. It works. All right. If you had 3 pieces of advice for a practice owner or somebody about to become a practice owner, what would they be?
I think surround yourself with like-minded people that are going to be pushing you and push them as well. And just kind of work towards a similar goal as each other, just because, you know, having that motivation around you is definitely a big deal, you know. And if you surround yourself with people that are just like, oh, I don't care, I'm not going to do anything, you're going to be the same way. So I think definitely, you know, having a good group of people around you would be one. And then also taking a lot of CE, you know, like we talked about, you know, doing clinical, business, a little bit of both, hiring a coach of some sort, you know, I think is a huge deal. I know some people think, oh, I don't need a coach, but you've talked about before, Tiger Woods has a coach, best golfer, you know, debatably, I guess, but and Michael Jordan, same thing, you know, like he always had a coach as well, you know, so I think it's definitely worth doing. You're going to learn something. You're going to learn at least something that you can apply. And then, yeah, the other thing, oh, with the CE thing too, also, like, I know there was a debate on your podcast recently with Tahir and Brisky about when to do the CE, and I'm kind of in between, you know, I think, you know, you start it younger because you have a longer time to see that ROI, but you need to have a good foundation first and get the bread and butter down, make sure you have all that stuff down pretty well before you start getting into more advanced procedures. But I think the earlier you do it, the better, because you're going to be able to see that ROI. And then the last thing I would say is, yeah, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I've learned a lot from your podcast, from the Developpreneur podcast, a bunch of other ones that I listen to out there. A lot of valuable information that you can get for free. Again, my wife was telling me when we were first talking about moving back to Indy, and I was like, you know what, I need to start figuring out this whole business side of the industry, because you don't learn that in school. So I started listening to some podcasts back then, and we were driving back and forth from Tennessee a lot, because we were actually getting married like right then around that time as well. So we were coming back up for wedding stuff, and just because we were looking to move back up here and stuff. So she had to listen to a lot of dental podcasts in the car on that 5-hour drive. So feel bad for her, but
she was all right with it though. She was okay. She let you.
Yeah. Yeah. She slept or read a book or something. You know, it's fine.
There you go. It's a good lady. Yeah. We'll keep her. All right, man, Greg, yeah. Dude, it's been fun for me just to watch you grow and like from when we used to work together to where you're at now. And dude, I could tell you like from coaching a lot of clients, it's always fun to watch people who actually apply the things that I teach and apply and just put in the effort that it takes to be a solid practice owner and to get the things you want. And that's something I've always respected you for. So dude, thanks for sharing part of your day with the listeners and thanks for coming on, man. And it's always good to keep in touch and talk to you.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for having me. And yeah, thanks for everything. Appreciate it.